Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. One of the things that makes this part of the presentation new for me is because of the fact that the Julian P. Cantor Political Commercial Archives has primarily been known for the video materials and the collection for all these years, and I'm hoping to do a little more about letting people know that we have some audio materials. The collection as a whole contains over 80,000 political ads. It's generally recognized as the largest one collection of broadcast political advertisements in the world. And we try to make it available for scholars and people that want to use it. The audio materials in the collection are made up of about 7,300 reel-to-reel audio tapes, 813 audio cassettes, 62 CDs, and just recently I discovered that we do own 56 phonograph records. When I became curator, to that point I'd only thought we had audio tapes. But this is estimated to contain about 550 hours of recorded material, and I've done a little bit of interpolation to extend the estimate of the actual ads to include about 23,000 political commercials, mostly played on radio. There's a picture of our facility and a shelf, and actually the tapes that are lined up along that shelf are three layers back. Very difficult to fish out the one you want. But we do think that it is a unique oral documentation of the issues and times involved in political campaigning. They are commercials that range from the presidents, off people seeking the presidency, all the way down to local races, school boards, state races, sheriffs, judges. Some of those are actually the nastier campaigns that we have. We also have a lot of speeches, interviews, and recordings of news programs. They date all the way back to 1936, which is where I'm going to start here in a minute, mainly talking about those materials. They were mainly contributions to the collection from radio stations and directly from the producers, the consultants. Julian Cantor worked in television. He began collecting materials in 1956. His passion was politics. And working in the television industry, he recognized how transient these materials were. They came into broadcast stations. They were used for the campaigns and then generally wound up deposited in the dumpsters. And he thought and had the foresight to think that these would be important in the future. People might want to look at them again. Started his hobby of collecting them. He did so until he retired from the broadcast industry in 1985 and started looking around for a place to keep his collection that had then grown to 25,000 ads. And fortunately, the University of Oklahoma was able to buy his collection and bring it to the campus in Norman and hire Mr. Cantor as the curator to keep developing his collection for 10 more years. By the time he retired in 1995, it had grown to about 65,000 or more ads. Actually, the number we put up here is always a lot fewer than what we really have because we can't catalog and inventory them that fast. So at that time, it was named in his honor when he retired. And in 95, the sessions records indicated we had 4,400 some odd audio tapes and 388 audio cassettes. We had only gotten to the first 2,028 audio tapes that we had cataloged about 7,200 spots from. And these collections were, this was cataloged from the original materials. There weren't any access copies or anything made for researchers or anybody that would want to look at them or listen to them. As I mentioned prior to this, all the effort, we've had over $1 million worth of grant funding to catalog and help preserve television advertising, but we've actually had no help whatsoever when it comes to dealing with the audio materials. And that's kept the utilization kind of low. We've only had about 1% of our request for access to be for these materials. And locating them is a very, very hard thing to do simply because we didn't have a complete inventory of them, for one thing. No access copies. If people wanted to see them, we had to make, or listen to them, we had to make copies on cassettes, and to keep from subjecting the originals to abuse and use by people that may not have known what they were doing. We also, in 2002, did a little survey and realized about 7% of these were exhibiting some kind of playback problems or damage. Starting to feel a little bit of pressure of the technological obsolescence of equipment. We only had two reel-to-reel decks. One of them was some missing some parts, and the other one didn't work at all. Had to do something about that. But at that time, in 2002, audio CDs were looking pretty cheap, or starting to become pretty cheap and pretty easy to do. So began a little project that I really wanted to get some access to these materials in a way that researchers could deal with them without threatening our originals. So we started a project, got a work study student, or graduate student actually, to start working on. There she is. We had, for the next 3 years, we were only able to keep one student working on it 20 hours or less a week while they were there for their school year. But even to that limited extent, we've already done in the first 3 years 160 CDRs that have, we've got 8,082 spots captured and made 21 backup DVDs of these. The audio project itself is, I'm going to kind of just glass over because everybody's seen audio projects. We try to do things pretty standardly, handling the materials properly, and we catalog them in a pretty standard way with an access database, burn them to CDs, have a unique ID number for each one, and save in about three layers of redundancy so we'll be able to get to them at some point. I'm very reluctant to call this preservation. It's just my attempt for access. I know that there's better ways to, but we haven't had any money, and we're doing this really on the cheap. So we're capturing the best quality we can and burning CDRs and making DVD backups and then making a final backup, encoding them to MP3s. I'm gonna skip over this part because I really wanna get to the playing and you some examples and letting you see what we've got here, because like I said, I didn't even know we had any disc. And this, when I discovered these, I thought, well, I'm going to a meeting here and people are really smart about, knowledgeable about disc recording. So, and I wasn't able to find much about these, but they're, our earliest campaign materials are from the 1936 campaign, and they were, seemed to be recorded from the radio stations in Chicago. We have 48 10-inch aluminum disc, and these say right on the label there that they need a fiber needle for playback. Fortunately, these, Julian Kander had the foresight to get these put on reel-to-reel audio, so we were able to make our CDs from the reel-to-reel without having to attempt to try to play these again. But I found out that this was something that private recording studios did from the late 20s through the early 40s. They would make air checks and make these recordings off the air for later replay on non-network stations. There seemed to be, I couldn't find much about them. It's kind of like Will Rogers says, all I know is what I read in the newspaper. Well, all I know is what I saw on the internet or was able to find on the internet. And it seems like they are pretty rare because the metal is very soft. And if they're played back with a steel or, you know, a modern stylus, it's likely to ruin the grooves. They were made for evaluation purposes, so a lot of times they might not have even been kept after the ad agency or the performer checked the fact that they were played. And also, the recycling programs in the metal drives for the war, you would think that a lot of these were thrown on the scrap heap, you know, to try to be patriotic. Nonetheless, we have a few. I'm going to skip over this too a little bit because I'll go back just a little bit because you see that as soon as radio became commercialized, the first commercial license for a radio station, the first thing they broadcast was presidential returns. Politics and mass media and recording have seemed to have gone together for a long time, and it's very economic driven. You see, by as early as 1936, the political party spent $2 million on radio. That's quite a lot of money. This new mass media that bringing politics into the living room kind of required a change of style of the politicians. They didn't have the stump oratory where they could shout at people, and if they were making their point, they could, you know, get that immediate feedback from the audience with some cheers and things. They had to, at that point, they started needing pollsters to let them know what they were thinking, you know. So they started to really model some of their messages according to what the polls were telling them. But in the 30s, news was not a big thing on the radio. The entertainment was sponsored by the advertising agencies, and the dramas, the radio dramas, were the big thing on television. So what they wanted to do was bring political messages into the home, and so dramatizations were a big way they could do that and get people to listen to them. In 1936, NBC and CBS actually tried to ban them because it thought it was manipulating people's thoughts too much. So I'm going to try to play you about 2 minutes of the first one of the 36 metal discs that we have. Let's see if I can get a cursor on that little, on the big thing there.
This station is operated in the public interest and is available to all alike for the discussion of economic, social, or political problems. The station is strictly neutral on all such matters, and all such broadcasts should be considered solely as the views of the speaker or sponsor. Our facilities for the next 10 minutes have been engaged by the Horner for Governor Committee. The program comes to you by electrical transcription. Ladies and gentlemen, we present an electrically transcribed episode in present-day Illinois history. The purpose of this broadcast is to acquaint the citizens of Illinois with the work and accomplishments of our great chief executive, Governor Henry Horner. As the scene opens, we are taken back for a few years into the past to enter one of the humble farm homes of central Illinois.
Well, it's sure beginning to look like we're going to have rain for 40 days and 40 nights, just like it did back in Bible times.
Yes, Father. And it's certainly too bad that our men folks had to take them hogs to market in this kind of weather.
Yeah, it sure is, because the way it looks outdoors, we're liable to having to build ourselves an ark like old Noah did.
Farm life certainly is hard at times.
Yeah, sure is. And I ain't so so sorry. I'm not too old to work. Sitting here by the fire and reading the papers ain't near as tedious as I used to think it was going to be.
Yes, I guess Dave and me kind of envy you ourselves. Life's been pretty hard of bringing up the children and everything. Oh, I certainly hope Dave gets a good price for those hogs.
Well, it keeps going, and they're talk about how great it is that they've got some roads by Governor Horner that they can get to the market. the other kind of ads are, it's hard to call them ads, but they were really promoting the election of a candidate, so that's what we interpret as an ad. And they were paid political announcements, but they were disguised as something else, news or other things. This is from a Roosevelt program that was sponsored weekly, I believe. This is actually what might be the first negative ad.
This program is sponsored by the Roosevelt Agricultural Committee, presenting the Roosevelt Sunrise Hour and your presidential campaign reporter, Paul Porter.
Good morning, Sunrise friends. I asked you Monday to give me evidence that I could show my city friends that farmers still get up early. Let me thank you this morning for the response. I have gotten literally hundreds of postal cards and notes that you are listening. I also received some suggestions from Sunrise listeners, and I'll try to take care of them. One suggestion came from a factory worker in Indiana. We are glad some city folks are joining this party. Now, his suggestion was that I tell you something about the vicious campaign that is being waged by the Republican National Committee to deceive workers about the Social Security Act. By coincidence, as I left the radio studio yesterday morning, I picked up a handbill on the street, which read, "Notice, deductions from pay start January 1. And then this cheap and dishonest piece of shoddy political propaganda undertook to mislead workers about the provisions of the Social Security Act. The Republican National Committee dared not put its name to the handbill, but its dishonesty was carried to the extent that they tried to make it appear that the circular was issued by the Social Security Board at Washington. Monday night, the former Republican governor of New Hampshire, John G. Wynett, went on the air to denounce these cheap political tactics of his party's high command. He said that the source of the misleading information on the Social Security Act had been traced to the Republican headquarters in Chicago. And Governor Wynett added, Landon has made the problem of Social Security a major issue in this campaign. After President Roosevelt had proposed that the problem be worked out on a nonpartisan spirit and in a humanitarian manner.
It's amazing they're still trying to work that out. Whoops. Gotta get that cursor over there. There we go. Okay. Moving right along, by 1944, we have some other kinds of material cropping up. This happens to be a 78, a lateral cut thing that we saw that, it seems to be made as a air check kind of situation. But I'm going to play a quick bit of this as a first jingle that we have. If I can get the cursor to come back. There it goes.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, an old favorite with new lyrics by Miss McNamara, dedicated to Senator Lucas, the Lucas Victory Song.
Everywhere you go, victory smiles on you. Everywhere you go, friends are tried and true.
I'd vote for him. Yeah, have new lyrics, and that seems to be a lot of ways that they were dealing with. And actually, in this next example here, was something kind of unusual, because in the 52 campaign, the presidential campaign, they actually tried, up until that time, the nomination for the party was generally settled at the convention. It wasn't wrapped up by primaries heading into the convention. So there was still a lot to be decided at these conventions. This next little clip here that I want to play for you seems to be one of the more unusual ones I've ever heard. It must have been played on Chicago radio to try to influence the electors that were there at the convention. Is performed by this person named Jinx Falkenberg, who was a model and actress, radio talk show hostess. She's actually given credit to be inventing the talk show. And Jimmy Dodd, who was a singer, entertainer, and later to be the host of the...
He was a regular on Jinx's program.
Okay, great to know that. I knew I'd learned something here. Well, again, once I get the cursor going up here. Here's this. Now, this is truly a negative ad, even though it's a song, a rip-off song, but here we go. Did I get it?
Uh-oh. Hi, Chicago. Here's a song everybody's singing.
Taft is a loser, a four-time loser, and we mustn't lose with him. We want a winner, and Ike is the man. We'll put him over, and we know we can. Taft is a loser, a four-time loser, and we want a victory. So hail Eisenhower, the man of the hour, and victory for GOP. Everybody sing!
Taft is a Everybody. Loser, a four-time loser, and we mustn't lose with him. We want a winner, and Ike is the man. We'll put him over, and we know we can. Taft is a loser, a four-time loser,
point home.
And we want a victory. So hail Eisenhower, the man of the hour, and victory for GOP!
Yeah! Needless to say, Eisenhower got the nomination. Okay. Yeah, in spite of that. Okay. But for the regular campaign, they went ahead and hired a big advertising agency. Rossa Reeves got the job to get president elected. Well, he was probably going to be elected anyway, since the Gallup poll said he was the most admired man in America. But nonetheless, they created some advertisements. Here's one. I don't know that this was intended to be humorous, but I kind of think it's interesting nonetheless.
Eisenhower answers America.
The Democrats have made mistakes, but aren't their intentions good?
Well, if the driver of your school bus runs into a truck, hits a lamppost, drives into a ditch, you don't say his intentions are good. You get a new bus driver.
Man makes a lot of sense. Okay, I'm going to try to shorten this up a little bit, but in 1956, the Democrats, you know, tried to get into the advertising game a little bit more. I found this 12-inch red vinyl, transparent vinyl disc that had a Democratic ad on it in 56, and it's not quite as spiffy.
My name is Estes Kefauver. I've talked to farmers all over America. I know you're disappointed in the Republican administration. They promised 90% of parity, if not 100%. Now you've got a sliding scale of prices, and they've slid to the bottom. Think it through.
That was Estes Kefauver. Vote Democratic. Pay Democratic Party recording.
Pretty cut and dry. Okay. But they did have a little jingle, too. I'll play a little bit of this one, not the whole thing. They got confidence. He's going to win this time. Okay. The next really interesting disc I found, and like I said, I just found these 56 little discs here, and they're all kind of cool. This is a record I found out was actually done as a promo thing for for that they gave away for people that worked on a campaign or I guess was at the convention, but if I get that on there, I'll play it. It seems to be rather unusual. It says, the record says High Hopes with Jack Kennedy, and not knowing, if you just saw the disc, you wouldn't know really who was on it, but here it is.
Everyone is voting for Jack, 'cause he's got what all the rest lack. Everyone wants to back Jack. Jack is on the right track, 'cause he's got high hopes. He's got high hopes. 1960's the year for his high hopes. Come on and vote for Kennedy. Vote for Kennedy and we'll come out on top. Oops, there goes the opposition girl. Oops, there goes the opposition girl. Oops, there goes the opposition girl.
It's got a second verse, but you're going to vote for Kennedy anyway once you've heard that, right? So the celebrity endorsements are kind of a standard type of political ad we have, even in the television world. Let's see. Oops, I did the wrong thing there. I want to play you just quickly. I'm running out of time, but I think I want to. I'm going to skip. Everybody knew Wayne was a conservative and a Republican and everything. I'm going to skip past his Nixon ads and James Buckley ad and everything, because this one is a little more interesting. You'll also notice that the sound is pretty draggy on this one, but you can tell it's Wayne.
I'm John Wayne, and I'm proud to be a part of the motion picture industry. But I'm not particularly proud of some of the pictures that have been made recently. Many so-called filmmakers have stepped beyond good judgment and good taste. I don't have to tell you that I'm against obscenity, but you can't clean the slate with a badly written bill. I say no to Proposition 18. I say don't cut off your foot just because you have a sore toe.
Paid for by Californians against Proposition 18.
All right. That's another bit of wisdom we don't want to forget. Now, these political ads always do kind of reflect some of the pop culture of the times. Here's a couple of, these are both minute-long ads. Do I have two more minutes? Okay. Just to let you know what's going on in the more modern world, let me get this one up here.
Hey, Doc, how's the future?
Marty, it's terrible. Democrats took control of the United States Senate.
Come on, Doc, who cares what party's in control?
This is serious, Marty. Daschle, Kennedy, Clinton controlling Alaska issues. Anwar is history. Oil and gas companies hoisted their rigs and ran. The timber industry chopped off at the roots. The fishing industry dead in the water.
Wow, I bet I can get a cheap fishing charter.
Great Scott, Marty. Businesses are failing. People are leaving.
Sounds like a mess. Say, who wins the Super Bowl, Doc?
Wake up, Marty, before it's too late.
The threat to Alaska is real. If Democrats win control of the United States...
Okay, one more, because we got to get all sides of this. Where that cursor? It's a hard thing to find.
This is the governor. I want to speak to you about Arizona's Corporation Commission. Since my last big movie, the Corporation Commission has approved building 14 new power plants and transmission lines in Arizona to pump up the energy you send us. Now two candidates for Corporation Commission say Arizona shouldn't let out-of-state conglomerates profit by polluting Arizona's desert and using the water just to send power to California. Mark Manoel and Nina Tresoff put these crazy ideas on a website called protectourpower.com. I don't know these Mark Manoel and Nina Tresoff, but I say, only girly man can stand a little more pollution, especially to keep my weight room lit. Manoel and Tresoff say they will terminate the California energy grab, but I've never grabbed anything in my life.
Paid for by Trace Offer Corporation Commission and...
Mark Manoil, 2004.
Okay, as you can see, there's a wealth of material there.
This is the governator. I want to speak to you about...
Okay, so we do plan to try to finish this project at some point. We did just finish a Save America's Treasures grant, which again was focused on the television materials, and that's just completed. So I hope to be able to get this audio material at least accessible by the end of next year and put up on our website a listing of the materials. And hopefully we'll have those MP3 files linked up to our access database for a researcher to come in can get access them pretty quick. But that's our plan. And if there's the email address, if anybody wants to ask me any questions, feel free to contact me. I'd be glad to learn something from you or help you in any way I can. Thanks. Yes. Any questions?